okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Action Jackson. Tonight, Chris Brandt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 250. Dow futures down 21. NASDAQ futures down 8. So not much. We're this morning slightly to the downside, but we know that can change because we generally have a up market these days. We'll see what happens today. Matter of fact, you really can tell there's a bit under the market. I mean, nobody, as soon as it goes down even a little bit, we spike right back up again, sort of like the good old days. Frank, how are you?
Very good. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. What's a wild weekend with the weather and so forth, and you're old when you have a your nephew has his 40th birthday party, and it was interesting. It's this place in Beverly, and Beverly, of course, for those who know Chicago, Beverly's dry, so it's BYOB and wine, which is nice. We had 20 people, and the weather's awful. And I see this just when you wonder why. I don't know. I'm probably gonna say something about a rude and heartless country has a rude and heartless president, but I won't. All of a sudden, I'm still watching, and everybody's seeing this little dog runs out in the street. He obviously was somebody's dog. I mean, it wasn't like some alley dog or anything. And not one car stopped. They just tried to do like a miss him by a little bit, dodge him just a hair. Finally, somebody clips him. And he takes off. He was running, but I think he was hurt. Not one person stopped. Not one person even slowed down more than 2 miles an hour. What the bleep is wrong with people? I mean, I'm too old for this. But if I had my hands around one of their necks, I don't know if I would have stopped. I just can't even. This is not my country. It's not my people. I don't know what color, whatever could have been, but any color, any shape, size in that neighborhood. I mean, not one person even slowed.
It's everybody.
I mean, can't you stop for a second that a poor dog gets off the street? Do you have to like try and miss him by an inch? I mean, what are we doing? I don't. I see this stuff, and it's not just in politics. It's not just in tweets. It's not just other places. It's everywhere. I mean, it's just everywhere. You see people even walking around.
But they don't want to take their time.
Well, none of this is new. My grandfather's been dead since 1968, and I remember driving with him, and he'd see somebody in traffic doing something crazy, and he goes, all that for 5 minutes more on the couch? What's the point? Has it changed? You got to be a total...
No, not at all. I'm amazed when I see people swerving on the Eisenhower, and they're passing me on the right and 20 miles an hour faster than me.
Well,
5 miles down the road, I'm next to him. Now, what did they gain?
Well, the right here, we just went from Congress Parkway to, what are we, Ida Wells now? In honor of,
yes.
Obviously, it's in honor of a pretty special person, so I have no problem with that. But if you walk out as a pedestrian and somebody comes by, they're not going to stop and let you walk. They're going to keep the speed right where they are and they're trying to miss you like if you're a slalom pole. I mean, where do we get this mentality? I don't get it. I just absolutely do not get it.
Well, Financial Place, and I think it was Financial Place, and the Congress, or Ida Wells now, was the first light between Omaha Chicago. I guess Wells would be the first one. I had somebody run a red light once and left salt on the back of my winter coat.
Yeah, that's
came by at 50 miles an hour. And there was that redheaded kid we knew who worked for First Stop. I forget
his there,
name.
Yeah.
I think he was an OEX trader.
He was a broker.
Got whacked and
yeah. Well, the market looks like it's absolutely on its way up. The Fed, I don't know what that number Friday, and of course you read this weekend, Democrats can't beat Trump because we have a 3.2% growth. I'm like, okay. Where are we going with this, Frank? And we come in with a deflator of 0.9%, which means year-over-year inflation is 0.9%. I mean, what are we doing? I don't see that anywhere near the cards. I mean, are we just gonna put numbers out there to make people feel good? I mean, I guess we are. I don't think the Fed's out of the game this year because if the growth numbers keep moving like that, and if we get any kind of inflation spike, which we sort of did a couple of months ago with the 0.4%, I don't see how they hang on the sidelines, even though they're obviously being told to by whatever.
By somebody.
I mean, I don't see if we can. Why? I mean, what is so valuable? What are people stealing? How many judges are people getting in, or how much are they trying to rig the future? What are they trying to do? Why is it so important to do all this stuff? I mean, what is this to have your people in? And I mean, clearly it is. I mean, it is to somebody. I mean, how much stealing is going on? What is the man behind the curtain doing here? I don't know. Who is the man behind the curtain? I mean, we have the funny part.
It's money, obviously. But who is the man? I have no idea.
I mean, even
is it the pharmaceutical companies? There's stealing going on there.
Okay,
is it the banks?
Even if you made a bazillion dollars,
feasting off of our largesse.
Even if you become like all of a sudden, if somebody gave us the. Where the market's going to be, and every day for the next 2 months, you and I are pretty good enough with options. We can make some money. Is there any amount of money we could actually enter that group? I don't know. Or is it?
They wouldn't let us join.
No. But how does it?
The far less of exclusive clubs have said no to you and me.
Oh yeah, we can't get on either side. It's at some point here. I don't know what does this blow. I mean, it ended up blowing in 1929. When in 28 it was a small club, 1% of the people made all the money. And, I was listening to somebody, the other night, reeling about how much can the top 1% of the people, they're paying 85% of the taxes, which of course is totally untrue, because you're only counting about income taxes, okay? Which is only one of four legs of the tax stool in this country, which everybody forgets to tell you, by the way. But if you make 99% of the money, shouldn't you pay 99% of the taxes? At least in the income tax spot? I mean, you would think so. But obviously they don't think so. I thought she was your rep. Of course I forget her name. Manny, could you find out who's the rep that took Astor's district, an African American lady. She's a former nurse and something. She was on yesterday and she's pretty darn bright. And she was talking about, every percent you raise the corporate income tax, and what's down to 21%? So if you raise it up even to 25%, that's $400 billion—a lot of money. There are those that would say you should raise it up there and you start paying off, cutting down some of the debt. I think 21%. The thing I would like to do is I don't mind leaving it at. Some low number. I'd probably be more like 25, but I think you should pay 31 or whatever the max is for everybody. And if you pay a dividend, you should be able to drop it then down to 21. And then the person paying the dividend should pay 15%. So the total is the same that everybody else pays. Because I sort of like fairness. I mean, I like fairness to rich people as well as poor people. I know that's an odd concept that you like fairness across the board, but it will keep us out of any insider group anywhere, the idea that something could actually be fair, Frank. So
I've been talking for 40 years that we should raise the upper limit for Social Security. I mean, I maxed out on that, as have you, for years. And it's like, why not pay a bit more?
Well, because you don't get more.
Not that much to begin with.
Well, because you don't get more. At some point, it's supposed to...
I do get more because I'm not surrounded by a bunch of destitute old people.
Well, okay, but what I'm saying is at some point, if it's supposed to be an insurance policy, at least some sort of one, why should it be income based? I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, people that have more money generally live longer, so I could guess I'll roll with that. But at some point, why? You know, I mean, it is. I mean, let's put it this way. It never was an insurance system. It's a welfare system and a tax system. It never matched. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely.
Well, I
don't mind that. I mean, it's like my neighbors who don't think they should have to pay property taxes that go to the schools because they don't have kids in schools. It's the same thing. They say, I'm not benefiting. And they're benefiting because there aren't, you know, packs of 13-year-olds on the street all day long.
Some areas that...
There is something called the common good.
Well, okay.
It's not all about Frank.
That'd be like saying,
yeah, like it to be.
I don't want to support bridges because I don't drive across water. It's like, shut the hell up.
Well, as usual, you two gentlemen, and Maddie, he's getting better, but he still is a... I don't know, he's not so much a moral relativist, but he's still too much of an absolutist. Now, if you're in a section, Maddie, say, and I'll contrast Evergreen Park and Orland Park, and it's, some would say it's tyranny of the majority, which you've talked about in some of the last couple elections when your person didn't win, right? In this case, with Trump, it might even be tyranny of the minority, but still. The idea being is now there's degrees to this. Now, Evergreen Park has a high school. And most of the older people say that high school's pretty darn nice. And every time there's some kind of an election that comes out that says, should we, you know, condemn 50 houses and turn it into the world's nicest parking lot for the students, the answer is always no. All right? Because they don't want people, the old people don't want to pay for that. They want to pay for education, and pretty much that's it. You know, not that they don't have a football team, baseball team, they do, it's just not to the nth degree. Now, in Orland, when you go out to vote, it could be we want $1 million to send the soccer team, the football team, and everybody else around the world to play. It always passes. So it's not just a basic education thing that people get to vote on. And I think if I was in Orland, I think that sucks. Because there's a lot of people that don't have kids, and I don't really need to be paying for somebody's soccer trip to Romania. I mean, the facilities there make Notre Dame look cheap. You know, I mean, you look at Lincoln Way
West. Well, that's a trick.
yeah. Well, I mean, the not the cheap when we were there. I'm talking about the cheap now. But, I mean, you drive by, what are the two schools you drive by on the bike trail out there? It's been a while since I've been on it. There's a Catholic school you drive by, and they got some, you know, they got the football field, and they got some stuff. Then you go by this Lincoln Way, and you're like, what the hell is that? It makes any junior college look pale. I mean, the incredible amount of money spent on artificial turf this, artificial turf that, and the, you know, stands. I mean, it's way beyond education, man. So I mean, at some point, I could see somebody saying enough with this. I mean, am I right? I mean, there is a level here. I agree with you, but otherwise, it just becomes, if the areas that have more people voting that have kids going to school essentially tax the people that don't have kids far beyond anything for education. For their kids, they'd be happy to tax you for a trip for your kid to Romania, and I'm saying I shouldn't be paying for that. Does that make me an old fart? Probably.
Well, you know. Lincoln Way is renowned for being mismanaged. Didn't they have a school superintendent in the past 5 years that went to jail?
Yeah, but he did a beautiful job building before he did, and somebody paid for it. Yeah, he took some of it.
Well, I know in Elmhurst here at York, the artificial turf fields were paid for by fundraising in the community.
Right, I understand that. So. I mean, I'm saying this goes both ways. So to say, people don't want to pay for education is now. If it were me, I would stop the property tax piece. In other words, I'd have a bigger chunk coming from. I mean, the federal government, as everybody does, they bitch and moan about education all the time, and they really don't pay for anything, right, Frank? Pay for books and some programs.
No, they just mandate.
So, yeah, they just mandate, don't give you any money. So I would say, if it were me, and if you were to start all over again, I would say that the federal government should pony up, you know, $1,000 a student or $2,000 or whatever it is. The state should pony up another $3,000 or $4,000, so you got to some minimal level to where you could at least have classes. And if the people around the area want to do better than that, then knock yourself out. I mean, I'm saying is that you shouldn't have this massive disparity between, you know, Robbins and New Trier. I mean, the Robbins people should still have, even though nobody there's got any money, there still should be a school that can do the basics. Now, how that would all work, you know, I'm not smart enough to do that, but I mean, I think it should be much more of a shared thing than just the local people, I think. But then again, you have areas, I mean, next time we have, Dr. Jansen, my buddy Blade, I believe that the two states, New Hampshire and Vermont, had diametrically opposed views to education. This is not a policy thing. This is what he told me. And this is going back a ways, so whether it's changed or not, it could very well have. He said one state spent an awful lot more per student than the other. So if you went in one state, you're talking about the common showers, the concrete locker room for the football team, no tile on the walls, that kind of stuff. And in the other state, it looked like, something out of a country club. That's an exaggeration, of course, and the interesting part, at the end of the day, the state that spent less money had every bit as good, maybe even better scores. Now, that means kids spent less time playing football and more studying, I don't know. But there's not that much of a correlation necessarily between once you get enough money, doubling it. You know what I'm saying? So this education thing is very tricky. And the idea that if you just throw more and more money, that is a big complaint, and it's a big issue between essentially the unions in Chicago, which, even though they're not all black, they give you the idea that they are, and people who are paying taxes. They're saying for $16,000 a year or $17,000, whatever every high school gets that has a student, that's enough. Maybe it could be.
How much of that money goes to pension? I look at my school taxes.
No, it's whatever.
I look at my tax bill, and the amount that goes to pension for District 205 is mind-boggling.
Oh yeah, well, I think that's separate, Frank. What I'm talking about, is from my sources, like a Walter Payton or a Whitney Young or even a Lincoln Park High. They get. That's why it's so important for them to have students in class like the first day. I think you get a $17,000 check to run that school.
Wow.
But now that's after all the pensions and stuff. So the pensions, I think, come off the top. So really, the taxation, the full bore system is probably something like $35,000 a student, which is like a real lot of money. So that's why people on the outside, and of course, they're saying, I'm giving you enough money now. Figure it out. Whether it is enough or it should be 18 or 19, I'm saying I don't know that. I'm not in the flow, but I can see why other people say it's too much. There's some high schools in the city, obviously, that are, and I know it has to do with the neighborhood, and I know it has to do with the families and all the other, you name it. There's a million excuses that I don't disagree with. But at the end of the day, I could see somebody paying, saying, look, figure it out. When I went to school, Marist, again, this is a long time ago, Marist was $225, $250. Now, clearly, I'm going to say if you put that $225, call it $300, maybe when I was a senior, put it in the price, PE, whatever it is, not PE, but the price thing. Matter of fact, I will do that here. I'm going to say that it's probably, $7,000, $8,000? And now we're saying $17,000 is nowhere near enough? It's never going to be enough. The people who run the Chicago Public Schools, you could give them $1 trillion, and it would never be enough. They'd piss their way through it in 5 years from now. They'd say we need more. Because look what we did. We built all these gorgeous schools, and look at the maintenance or something. I don't think there is a...
We built them in the wrong neighborhood.
We built them in the wrong spot.
We
built them in the wrong spot. We did something. Or something's wrong with it. But I'm saying that there is no amount of money you can give these people. I honestly believe that. When you're talking about a governmental agency like that. I know it's pretty darn harsh, but I say something costing 300 hours. I'll use my little calculator here. I'll skew this deal. 350 in, when did I graduate? 1970. Would cost something, something. How much in 2019? Mr. Weber.
How much what in 2019?
What would $350 hours in 1970 be worth in 2019?
$1,500.
$2,280.
Okay.
Pretty close, my friend. All right, so we're giving people
$17,000. So Notre Dame tuition in 1970
1500. That's an
I'm just saying, so we should be spending, that tuition should be about 10,000 now, 12,000.
Well, 2800, I think,
all
is what
things all constant.
I'm going to say my senior year was 3,000 and it was another 1,000 for room and board, right? So
right.
That was 1974. I mean, you look at this once in a while, you get stunned. 3,000 in 1974 is 15,300 in 2019, and the real number is 70.
75 now, they're saying.
And about 15 of that is the room and board has gone a long way from, you know, mystery meat and chicken every night to a four-star restaurant, and they got two or three East Bank clubs over there for people and all kinds of stuff which we didn't have. So, I mean, there's something on top of that, but still, the basic education, you know, should be 16, 17. You know, I mean, there's stuff that you need to do for kids now. You need, you know, stuff, but say 20, not 75. I mean, why do you think the economy and the society is as screwed up as it is? I mean, does anybody really think that if your median income is $36,000 per individual, for family, what, it's 54 or something, Frank? Median income per individual, that 1 year of an education for one kid is 2 years' income for the average person? Does anybody think that that's anywhere near correct? I mean, how could you? Right? It's not even close. I mean, you take a one-night stay in a hospital. I mean, what is that now? It's got to be, what, a couple $1,000? Five? It's not the 200 a night like it used to be. Anyway, S&P Futures... Oh, we got time. So we're going to talk to Mr. Matt Taibbi today, Frank. It should be very interesting.
Taibbi,
okay. Thank you, Matt.
He's supposed to be joining us at 7:05.
Yep.
He'll join us for half an hour. So yeah, that should be good. It's been a while since we've had him on.
We have everybody. He has an article that Matty will, of course, tweet out that we're going to talk about, and of course, we always talk about other stuff. But you know, as what's happening in the press area, with the current administration and in general, where it's all gone with budgets, and is there anybody that even around to do the right stuff? Are people educated? What can they do? What's the people's attitude toward them? And Matt is terrific on all that stuff, so it'll be fun. S&P futures down one. Dow futures down nine. We're pretty darn flat around the board. NASDAQ futures down three. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. the daily news, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Ollie, Mr. Miller, over the boardroom, Mr. Frank Fahey. S&P futures, E-minis up, down 2 points. NASDAQ futures down 525, down on 20, so not much happening. In the Dow, which I have right in front of me, the only thing that's moving is, well, we got Boeing down $4 as they get a load of this. They evidently had a system on the 737s before that if one of the outside sensors of the angle of attack of the plane disagreed with other stuff, there was an alarm. And evidently they took the alarm off on the 737 MAX and didn't even tell Boeing that they disabled that system. So not until after the Lion Air crash, which is somewhat interesting. But then again, there's those that say, oh, Boeing is just too darn big. You just got to keep buying it no matter what. No matter what they did, they'll come out of it unscathed. So depending on what you believe there. DAX down 30 points, 0.2%. FTSE down 4. Call that flat. CAC around down 11.2. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 48.2%. Shanghai down 23.8%. Hang Seng, we're up to 87.9%. So a mixed bag over there. Oil is retreating here a little bit, down 17 cents, 63.11. Brent, 71.90, down 25 cents. RBOB gas, 208, that's down from the 215. Right, paid 307 this weekend, which is the first time over $3 in a while. Silver down 8 cents, 15 bucks exactly. Gold down 6, 1282, but still up over the price of last Thursday, so a little bit of a rally on Friday. Matty, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Horrible weather all over the place.
Horrible weather all week. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a crash on the south side, Lakeshore Drive, northbound, just before 47th Street. There's an accident, and that's causing delays. 67th to there, about 25 minutes already, so congestion, stop-and-go traffic. Expect delays on Lakeshore Drive on the south side as they work to get that accident cleared. No issues on Lakeshore Drive on the north side. Edens and Kennedy, traffic starting to build, especially heading out toward O'Hare this morning for business travel, but no accidents to report. Eisenhower Stevenson, traffic building too, but nothing out of the ordinary there. We do have rainy conditions throughout the area, and that's causing slow travel time, so keep that in mind as you're heading.
We need the water.
Exactly. Weather today, rain on and off throughout the day, cold temperatures, a high of just 49, just an absolutely miserable day for April 29th, for any day really.
When do we become Seattle?
I don't know, we're colder than Seattle, but we still get the water. Right now it's rainy and 43 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 49. For our Phoenix listeners, they have rain in the forecast too, and their temperature will stay right around where it is right now, 80 degrees and clear this morning, and then rain rolls in later on, and we'll stay right here at 80. So that's your temperature for Phoenix. In sports, speaking of Phoenix, the Cubs were down in Phoenix, and they took 2 of 3 from the Diamondbacks. Snapping the Diamondbacks' 5-game winning streak on Saturday night, they had a 3-0 lead, blew that. Then they had bases loaded, nobody out, couldn't score. Then they had a guy on third with less than 2 outs 3 different times, and they finally got the big hit. It was Ben Zobrist, a 2-run double to give the Cubs the cushion they need. Chris Bryant tacked on a sac fly RBI. And then the bullpen still almost gave it up, but the Cubs held on to beat the Diamondbacks 6-5 in 15 innings.
I mean, what was left of the bullpen?
That's right. They used every guy, as did the Diamondbacks. The White Sox obviously were weathered out on Saturday, but they won on Friday, and they were looking for the abbreviated 2-game sweep yesterday, and they got it, beating the Tigers 4-1. So the White Sox have won a couple of games in a row. So as we take a look at our Monday morning standings in Major League Baseball, the Sox are 11-14. They're in fourth place out of 5 in the AL Central, 5 games behind the first place Minnesota Twins, who are playing really good ball. They've won 3 in a row and are 16-9. The Cubs are in second place in the NL Central, 14-12 overall, 2.5 back behind first place St. Louis. Cubs have won 7 out of 10. And the Diamondbacks dropped 2 in a row to the Cubs, so they're now 16-13, still off to a very good start. They're 2.5 back of first place LA, third place in the National League West. Lastly, Chief, the Bears wrapped up their 2019 NFL draft. They had 5 selections in the draft. They signed a ton of free agent guys afterwards, including a couple of Notre Dame linemen. So we'll get into that shortly. But they were highlighted by their third pick, which was their first pick. They traded up 12 spots to get him, running back David Montgomery out of Iowa State. Fourth round, they took Riley Ridley, the wide receiver out of Georgia, who looks pretty good. I think that's going to turn out to be a really good pick, actually, for a fourth rounder. They didn't have a fifth round pick. Sixth round, they had Duke Shelley, cornerback out of Kansas State, and then they had 2 seventh round picks. They took a running back out of Florida Atlantic, Kareth White, and then a cornerback out of Division II Valdosta State. His name is Steven Denmark. He's got.
How many listeners can name where Valdosta State is? I know I can't.
I can't either. He's got great size, and they won the national championship in Division II. So kind of a reach there, but they took Tariq Cohen and Adam Shaheen, who are not D1 players, and they turned out to be pretty good, especially Cohen.
The
Valdosta's in Georgia. Maddie, you missed the most exciting thing in baseball yesterday. The White Sox had 20 strikeouts in 9 innings.
Very exciting. And I missed the game, so I didn't see the highlights, but it was just a collective effort, everyone mowing them down, huh?
Oh, yeah, the starter, and God, who was it? I don't even recognize the name. Had 14 strikeouts in 6 innings.
Wow.
I wonder how bad was Chatwood hurt?
I don't know. It looked like he tweaked something running the bases. He should have scored on Almora's single, and he couldn't run. But that was a big hit he got.
I'm sort of curious as to if he couldn't run in that spot, why you wouldn't put another pitcher in. Then maybe you don't want 2 pitchers going down hamstrings in the same play.
I mean, that might have been the thinking. We got all they had left was starting pitchers, and they're all cold, sitting there, probably didn't even have their spikes on, and to ask them to go pinch run in a key situation, I don't know. And Chatwood probably told him he's fine, but he clearly wasn't fine. He was wincing. He pulled something.
Then he didn't come back out to pitch, which I thought was going to hurt him, but how long, when the relief pitchers are pitching, how long is the game? Was it 6 hours?
Yesterday was 5 hours and 36 minutes, 15-inning game.
But, I mean, when the relief pitchers are pitching, the game is half as fast as when the starters are in there.
That's definitely true.
It was I don't know when they. Do you, either of you guys like any of the new ideas for extra inning games? The two that were being tossed about yesterday. One is after 12, it's just a tie.
I don't like that.
And the other is, what are they doing in college? After nine innings, they start the next inning with a guy in second base.
They're doing that in the minor leagues, yeah. Beginning in the 10th inning, you start with a runner on second base. And
that one helped the Cubs.
In an effort to speed up the game. I don't think you need to do either of those things. They're adding a 26th man to the roster beginning next year. I think that'll help. But I think they're going to cap it where you can only do 13 pitchers, so it'll be 13 pitchers, 13 position players. But I don't know. I mean,
well, can you pitch a position player like you can now?
Sure, of course. But I don't think.
Well, you have more than 13 pitchers.
The percentage of extra inning games that go past 12 innings is pretty low.
Correct.
So I don't think you need to do a huge change. I mean, occasionally you're going to have a marathon game like you did yesterday, where it goes 15 innings and neither team, you know, can get the big hit, and the bullpen is pitching well, and that just it happens. But typically those extra inning games end in the 10th or 11th.
What the Cubs, I think, have tried everything, but now after a couple of years in the playoffs, that and obviously didn't win the World Series. Which, you know, it's hard to do, by the way. It's not like I'm saying you should every year. But to me, one of the, you know, they got a very likable team. They play great defense. They do a lot of stuff right. The Achilles heel of that team is in key situations, people not putting a bat within a foot of the ball. And I don't know, they worked on spring training. I don't know if it got any better. I mean, this David Bodie's been a hero for them. So what inning did he come up? Was it the 13th or 14th? And he's got the guy throws one about 2 feet outside, and I thought he tore his back trying to go for it. The next pitch was further outside. It almost went in the dugout, and he swung at it. I'm thinking, what are we doing here? What are we working on all spring? The ball had to be 2 feet outside, man. I mean, and it didn't come within 3 feet of it.
I saw it. There were two wicked sliders that were low and away in the dirt, and he chased them both, and certainly not good swings.
Well, I mean, you need to.
Isn't that why we sent Ian Happ to the minors?
Yep.
Yeah.
The same behavior.
Exactly.
But he was the guy last year that was the clutch hitter.
Yeah, Bodie's having a really good year. The Cubs are scoring more runs than almost anyone, so I'm not going to complain right now. They're averaging about 5.5 runs a game. They scored 6 again last night. I think they're either leading the National League in runs scored per game or they're second, but they're fifth overall in all of baseball without a DH.
Okay.
But with a juice ball?
Well, everyone has a juice ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I know. How much time would a juice ball be adding to games, the average game? Do you think it does?
I don't know how much of it's a juice ball, and how much of it every batter seems to think they get 3 home run swings now. I mean, what do you suppose the difference in stats would have been, you know, back in the day, even more the older guys that were big home run hitters, the Mantles and the people, they're the creed in those days, you got 2 and the team got 1. Now it's everybody, you come out of minor leagues now, you know, and you think you get 3 for defense. And when Sammy Sosa was hitting juiced up himself, not just the ball, was hitting 60.
Allegedly juiced up.
Yeah, allegedly. When he was hitting 60, you didn't want to take the bat out of his hands. But when you're hitting 20 or 18, how do you feel you get 3 swings? My problem with the Cubs, and it's not, I mean, Matty will go into this general statistics thing, which frosts me, but it's okay. It's old and young. The point is, in the key games and the key situations, they fundamentally fall apart at the plate. And we saw it in a couple of playoff series. And it's something you need to work on the whole time. I mean, last year, when I watched more Boston than I need to watch, they don't do that. Their best players somehow choke it down and get the bat on the ball when they need to. And that's why Boston won World Series going away last year. I'm not saying they're going to win it again this year.
They're 11-17.
Yeah, they got a crummy start. But the point is,
the Cubs have won more games than anyone dating back to 2015.
Okay.
More than anyone. More than Boston, more than the Yankees, more than the Cardinals, more than the Dodgers. They've won more games than anyone.
There is a phenomenon.
So they're doing something right.
I don't say they're not.
There's no doubt at the end of last season they sucked at the plate. And I don't disagree with you. The in baseball, it's not a Cubs thing. In fact, you can yeah. look at it. They're middle of the pack. That the, like you said, choking down, giving one for the team on strike two, that is a very uncommon occurrence for whatever reason. I don't know. But I also know that the pitching that they're facing is way harder than it used to be. It's not even close. You don't have a tired starter in the eighth inning on his throwing 160 pitches. You got fresh guys coming in fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, throwing 98. And it's really hard to hit that. And the strikeouts have gone up every year for 20 years because of it.
Okay. And what my
point, the game's different. That's all I'm saying.
Right. But what I'm saying, when you do these gross statistics, which you and your ilk like to do.
I just like to deal in facts.
Those aren't facts. They're statistics. There's a big difference.
Well, I'm okay. whatever.
What's the difference?
There's no difference between facts and statistics. Now, the opinion you form off these statistics, that can be, you know, factual or not, but the statistic is the statistic.
What I'm saying is there's a phenomenon in baseball where you fatten up on certain pitchers. And then you end up, just because the Cubs have more RBIs and more runs scored, they have a team that has a lot of talent. And saying those guys, when everything's swinging easy, if they've got the 3-1 lead, I guarantee you that team will make it 7-1, 8-1. When the chips are off, they're terrific. They're fantastic RBI people.
So Zobrist hit last night in the extra innings to win the game. That the chips were off at that point.
No, I didn't say that.
That's what you just said. They don't do anything when the chips are off.
What I'm saying is you watch them when they go against some of the better pitchers. It makes your flaws.
That's what every team does when they go against the better pitchers.
Okay.
It's really hard to hit the better pitchers.
I'm saying the flaws are, that's why the White Sox had 20 strikeouts yesterday. They're not very disciplined. All of a sudden you come up against a good pitcher. All it does is accentuate the problem. Okay. And when the Cubs get into the playoffs, it accentuated the problem the last couple of years. Guys that should be good batters all of a sudden are swinging at balls in the dirt that shouldn't be. And you have a lot of strikeouts. I mean, you start having 12, 13 strikeouts in a game. It makes the game boring as hell. It's like a little league game. And thirdly, I mean, they look bad doing it. So there are people.
I'd like to emphasize it was Detroit who struck out 20 times, not the White Sox.
Oh, all right. Maddie. So there. Well, there's, take that statistic.
You're the one that said it wrong, not me.
Oh, I thought you said the White Sox. Anyway. I mean, we're never going to. I'm saying when you look at people, they have guys that, especially with these shifts, there's a way to do something with it. And I agree. These pitchers come in there when you're in there for one inning, it's a different game. I
mean, Cubs, by the way, not to throw water on the fire, but they're middle of the pack every year in strikeouts. This year they're middle of the pack. Last year they were middle of the pack. 2017.
But they don't have middle of the pack ball players. They got guys that think they're MVPs.
2017, they were a little bit worse. They were 24th out of 30 in strikeouts in 2017. 2016, when they won the World Series, they were 22nd in strikeouts. So they were on the lower end in strikeouts. So that's not great. But they won the World Series that year. So it doesn't matter that much.
I want to see a progression. The guy who's progressed dramatically is Baez. But he was
2015. Yeah. They had the second or third best record in baseball and lost in the NLCS. They actually were the worst in strikeouts in 2015. That would be the one time I would agree with you that 2015.
Well, Baez used to throw at balls that landed 5 feet in front of the plate.
But they also had they won like 97 games that year or whatever it was.
Yeah.
The other teams that were bad in strikeouts: Houston, the Washington Nationals. You know, some good teams. Pittsburgh, who won 98 games that year and hosted the Cubs in the wild card, they were 24th
in
strikeouts.
If you have the better players,
I'm just saying the game has changed. I mean, you're comparing a game in 2019 to a game in 1979, and the games are different. Not saying better. I'm just saying different.
Well, they are different. I watch basketball, and it's first guy over half court shoots a three-pointer. It's different. It sucks.
I mean, you don't have to watch it, but it is, and I don't disagree with you. When the good teams do it and they go in, it's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah.
When the bad teams try to do it and they don't, like the Bulls, it sucks.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, if you're that good at it, it looks like poetry in motion. But how many people do it? It's like me trying to stuff the ball. Good luck with that.
Well, now the NBA playoffs have gotten relatively interesting because they weeded out all the crap teams, and it's down to the final. 8 teams or whatever, but yeah, it's
without the money, I mean, I don't know what the money is involved, but which sport is healthier, hockey or basketball? You can watch two teams you never even knew who they were in hockey and watch them in a playoff game, and it's a good game. I mean, they're pretty close to even. I mean, they're you know, there's an incredible amount of hustle. There's not much jawing at people. I mean, it's you know, I mean, I never played hockey. I never could skate very well. But I tell you what, it's a pretty serious game. I mean, every one of those things, you can watch two teams you never heard of, and it's pretty darn good entertainment. There's not many breakage in play. I mean, it's am I right or not? I mean,
yeah, I think the NHL playoffs are great. I can't really watch it unless the Blackhawks are in it because I don't know any
that for a while.
Yeah, I know. I don't know any of the players, and so it's hard for me to follow. And if I don't know any of the players, I just have no interest. But the NBA. When it gets later in the playoffs, it's much better. But in basketball, just by in general, if there's a 30 point game like there was yesterday, a 25 point game, that's never going to be interesting.
No,
you know, the Celtics blew out the Bucks. Now I do think that's going to be a great series because I think the Bucks are really good and I think the Celtics are good. So I think that series will end up being fine. But that game, whereas in hockey, there's never going to be a 25-0 game. Even a blowout in hockey, it might be 2-0, and you know that, you know, the puck could bounce one way and you're right back in the game.
Well, imagine hockey if you decided that if you could score a goal from outside the blue line, it was worth 3 goals. Imagine how everybody would be winging stuff from out there. Be coming back with the curved sticks. But this basketball, one team gets ahead by 10, the other team tries to catch up by only shooting threes. That's the only way you can catch up now. All of a sudden they miss 5 in a row, and now it's 20 and the game's over. Pretty much. I mean,
that happens.
People do come back from whatever. Anyway, I would like to see, you know, a little more fundamentals in baseball. I mean, but then again, the guys that are on the Cubs, I think the Cubs have some incredibly talented ball players. And I think as time goes by, they should be getting a little bit better at some of the, what did you think of Contreras trying to, he almost made it home last night.
That's one of those, if you do it, you better make it. And he didn't. He was out by a mile. But the thought was interesting. I mean, but Zobrist was up, and he's the guy that ends up getting the game winning hit. Maybe he gets the game winning hit there instead. I don't know. But I love Contreras. I love his aggressiveness. I love the enthusiasm he plays with. He makes mistakes. He's another guy that
he looked fresh as a daisy after 15 innings. The other catcher looked like he was ready to drop.
Yeah. Contreras is a guy that absolutely will expand the strike zone sometimes, but then he's also the guy that, you know, will wow you with you know, he hits the home run last night and you know, makes plays on defense, and he steals a base and he does all kinds of stuff. So I really like the guy. He just, you got to hone it in sometimes. I mean, Baez, we've seen this year, has absolutely honed it in.
Yeah,
he still doesn't take enough walks, but he is excellent defensively. He runs the bases better than anybody. He made the diving double play save yesterday.
That was a great play.
Unbelievable. Flipped it with his glove. And then he hits for, you know, great power, and he's clutch. He just doesn't walk. But he's improved, and you hope Contreras can keep doing that too.
It is, I don't know, I guess in my lifetime, your best hitters, I mean, those are the guys that really knew the situations. I mean, yesterday, as spectacular as that guy's been this year, he comes up and he had one of the key spots with the bags loaded, and he swung at 3 balls and missed by what, foot and a half.
He had a bad game at the plate yesterday. Baez.
He was like 0-6. Wasn't
he? I think he was 0-5 with a walk or 0-6 with a walk, something like that. I mean, it was a bad game, but he defensively he was so good he didn't let the bad night at the plate, you know, didn't take it with him to the field like a lot of guys do, and he was making all kinds of plays in the field.
What happened to Descalzo? Was he hurt?
I don't think so. I think they just pinch hit for him with Bodie later in the game.
Oh, he started?
Or not Bodie, with Zobrist. Yeah, he started. Okay, he played like the first 11 innings, and then they brought Zobrist.
They were calling you to suit up, but they had nobody left.
Yeah, they double-switched Descalzo out for Zobrist.
What do you do if your last catcher gets hurt? I can't believe it's never happened. Then what do you do?
It does happen. I think you got to have an emergency catcher. The Cubs is Schwarber.
Yeah, but he was out too.
Well, then you've got to put somebody else out there, I guess.
Who?
Probably Zobrist. He plays every other position.
I think it actually might be Zobrist. I mean, they have all this worked out. They basically go down the roster, and anyone who's ever played catcher in high school, college, minor leagues, whatever.
And I would never let that slip, because the last thing you want me is back there if you hadn't been there for 5 years. Good Lord. All right, Frank, what, are the market doing anything this week? Or we have the new
has potential for a wild week. Lots of economic reports. It's employment week. We have personal income today. All the manufacturing. There's probably five manufacturing reports. And we have an FOMC meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday with the meeting at the announcement at 1:15. Don't let that catch you by surprise on Wednesday.
And there's going to be a news conference.
Right, okay, yeah. And the chairman speaking at 1:30. So there is a lot going on. Every day has an employment numbers come out.
What do you make of the earnings
so
far?
We have consumer confidence tomorrow. I mean, it has the potential to be wild.
What do you make of the way the earnings are popping out here, to where the fangs are absolutely back in control, where those stocks go up every day, and you're seeing some huge hits out of it's not all just the Amazon's going to take over the world. I mean, you've got transportation average all of a sudden is getting hit after it's been going up. You got 3M looking like there's never going to be another manufacturing job anywhere. You got a lot of people like laying off, and then these other people are to the moon, Alice. I mean, I can't get over how much if you look at what's happening to the Disney, Netflix, that whole area. We need a double income in this country because people are convinced that everybody's going to be spending that much on entertainment. Is there that much money to go around in entertainment? I guess that's what I concern myself with. And I don't know, what'd you make of the GDP number? I don't believe it because I think a lot of it's inflationary, Frank. I really do. I don't even know if we don't have the infrastructure to prove me right or wrong. Nobody comes out.
We can go back to your previous statement about facts versus statistics. We'll call the GDP statistics.
Well, I mean, it's just to explain what it's supposed to be, the GDP should be somewhat, I won't say easy, but relatively easy to figure out because it's the gross number of all goods and services in the country. So if that goes up, we used to have in bad times, so I don't necessarily think we should have it again because I hope we don't have these bad times, but there was a time back in the inflationary era where people would actually say, by the way, Matt Weber's gas station, sales were up 10% from last year, but it looks like we sold 11% less gallons of gas. We just charged 12% more for them. I mean, that was part of the message, and now it's not. So hopefully we never get to the point where we need it again. But I don't necessarily buy the fact. Right now, when you see the GDP of 3.2%, they're telling you that the goods and services actually went up 4.1, and they deflated it by the deflator, which is inflation, of 0.9%. So if you are of any kind of an ilk that says, I think the inflation's 5%, okay, then the math goes the other way, that your actual GDP is down 0.9%. So it's a real key number. And again, I can't prove it my way, but they're making it so ridiculous, Frank, that it's pretty easy to argue that it's not quite right. I mean, does anybody really think that from last year it's what, 0.9%?
No.
I mean, so now the question is, where is it? Is it 5 or 6, like David and some other people think, and maybe I think? I don't know. But if it's 4, we're even, right?
It's a waiting game.
Yeah.
And then that's weighting.
Yes.
I don't trust the algorithm because anecdotally, I don't see it.
No. All right, Frank, take care, buddy. We're going to have Mr. Matt Taibbi, right?
Taibbi.
Oh, okay. Thai is in Thai food. Okay. Taibbi. Right.
We'll get him there. Well, okay, great. It'll be fun.
He'll get me there somewhere. SP Futures down only a buck and a half. NASDAQ Futures down 5.
Join us next.
Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down a buck and a half, a whole buck and a half. NASDAQ futures down five. Big stock, well, the only stock is moving a lot here today, even though it's a big time stock. Boeing is down 391, trading 376.88 as there was a report over the weekend that they somehow forgot to tell Southwest Air that they had disabled some warning system of one of the outside angle of attack meters, didn't match the inside. They didn't tell them that they had somehow disconnected it, which is sort of interesting. But then they did after the Lion aircraft. Man, how are you, buddy? Been too long. Been too long. How you been?
How you doing?
Doing good. We, you know, we always one of our most popular guests. And then Matt sent me this article he wrote last week, and I went through it. It's very, very interesting. And did you? I assume you tweeted it out, Matty, to everybody.
Oh yeah.
And there's a lot of different points of view on this whole. You know what the weird part of it? This is strange, Matt. Is all the points of view, a lot of them are different, and yet when you read them, they all make sense. is there something weird about that? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yours mm-hmm. clearly is. I talked to, I mean, I just want to come on cold with you, because obviously, you do some really good work and I want to sort of match that when you're here. And I talked to a fellow named, I don't know if you ever listened to the show, and Eric May's been on, but Eric cut his teeth as a reporter in Washington, way back in mm-hmm. the day, and now he's a, professor and a novel writer here in Chicago. And I said,
oh, okay, no, I don't.
And I said, I, hey, you know, I'm having Matt Tate me on tomorrow. And he goes, oh, wow. So we talked for a while, and I told him, he, of course, had already read the article, and he was, loved some of your points, was, didn't like a couple of them, but that's, you know, that's the way of the world. We're never going to get two reporters to sort of agree on anything, but, it's an interesting world we live in, and I don't know, it seems to be changing in some ways, and some people, not naming them, maybe they're in the White House, are taking us in directions that I never thought we'd be. And we're having debates that I never thought we had to have. And I don't know, am I just being old and grumpy about that, or am I right?
No, I think we're entering some pretty weird territory on many different fronts. I think that's the case. And just to be clear, I'm no fan of Donald Trump. So I mean, I wrote a book called Insane Clown President about the guy. So yeah. Politically, he's not somebody I've ever really been a fan of. But this story, I felt iffy about it from the start, just as an investigative reporter. And I think that's been borne out by the Mueller report.
I have an odd view of that. I'm not essentially what you're... I wonder, Matt, if you were from Illinois, if you would have written the article the exact same way. And when I say that is, we had a sleazeball wannabe that happened to be governor here, and he
yes I remember
yeah and he did some stuff that when you think about it there was intent to do crummy stuff. He pretty much didn't pull it off, and now he's in jail, and I think I actually, you know, everybody, what do they say, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every once in a while. I actually was dead on in where this report was going to come out. I thought there would be not enough evidence to really do anything. It was going to show a lot of starts and stops in all kinds of wrong directions and an awful lot of bad judgment. And a lot of what probably they couldn't find evidence of was sort of incompetence and people who tried to go there and didn't get there, sort of like Blagojevich. And, you know, and I think somehow...
No, I think it's very, very different from the Blagojevich story.
Okay.
I mean, the Mueller report, among other things, makes abundantly clear that the Russian government did not have, they actually use this term, did not have pre-existing contacts with the Trump campaign, you know, before Trump was elected. So there never was a channel between the Russian government and the Trump campaign. And all the various incidents that were referred to and were blown up in the media as being, you know, parts of this sort of web of conspiracy turned out to be sort of unrelated incidents that, you know, really never amounted to anything. And I think, you know, my complaint is that as journalists, we're not supposed to be in the kind of the dot connecting business. We're not supposed to say, oh, if you put all this together, then it must be a conspiracy. No, we actually have to connect the dots, and that we didn't do. And it turned out that we were very wrong about all this stuff.
Matt, what do you do with a story that I kind of followed only because I'm an old manufacturing guy? During the campaign, I mean, again, this is not something I would pursue, and I would agree with you 100% on it, but I don't know what to do with it. That's why I was going to wait to get you on this morning. There's a story that, with Trump during the campaign, talked all about this pipeline, the one going through the Ogallala area there. And we were going to build it, and Obama couldn't get it to build, and whether he didn't want to do it, who knows what. But he was going to build it, and he was going to use American pipe, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there going, you know, I've been in the manufacturing area too long. That stuff's all been ordered. There's no way. I don't even know if we have a rolling mill for that kind of pipe left in the U.S. If we do, not that we couldn't do it, but it would take the time. So sure enough, they take the pipeline, and they approve it. Now, whether it started or not, I don't know. But turns out all the pipe, in fact, had been ordered, and most of it had been delivered, like a couple of years ago, and it's piled up. And it was delivered by, and the supplier is, this Canadian company that now is owned 49% or 51% or something by this Russian dude that bought the place that was the guy who gave Putin his first check to run for office in like 1990 or something. I don't want an investigation in that. I mean, but I sit there and read it and I go, how could this even be possible? I mean, is there a dot here to connect? I agree with you. You can't go trying to connect. But it's something I've never had to deal with.
I don't know anything about that story, and it's not in the report. And it was
no. This is long before the report. But I'm saying, what do you even do with something like that? It's something that I never had to deal with. I mean, in my life, I never dreamed that, you know, the John Kennedy had a hotel in Moscow. You know, it might be a buddy of Khrushchev's. I mean, it just is something that I never even thought possible in my generation. And now it seems like,
well, again, we're also, yeah, again, right there, you're conflating the Soviet Union and Russia,
right,
and, you know,
well, I agree.
Countries, and, you know, it's totally acceptable nowadays for foreign businesses. I lived in post-communist Russia for 10 years.
Really? Wow.
And for a long time, I speak Russian, and for a long time, it was the hot thing for every major business in the world to try to open up an office in Moscow. And that didn't change when Putin went into power. In fact, when Putin, assumed the office of the president in 1999, basically, I was one of the people who was one of his earliest critics, and yet the West was embracing him at the time. And so it's totally normal for people to have business interests in Russia. At least it was until about 2 years ago when this thing happened.
Right. And, well, I mean, what do you make of him?
Chevron had business interests. Yeah. I mean, McDonald's, IKEA, every major transnational corporation in the world was doing business in Russia while I was there.
Well, same thing in the Middle East. And all of a sudden, we don't like this guy, we don't like that guy, and they used to be our buddies. It makes it very difficult to keep track. Well, what do you make of, what do you have to be in the industry, the news media today? The budgets are cut. There's allegedly more and more news, but there's less and less reporters. It just gets circulated faster. What is the state of the industry? Is the industry prepared to? We had who do we have? Adam was what was the lady's name? Cheryl Atkinson.
Cheryl Atkinson, yeah.
And we were talking about something. I know something about it. People quizzing the Federal Reserve, and her answer was, "Chief, they're not you. You know this stuff. There's other areas you don't know anything about, which is true. But this one, you happen to know something about. The people sitting there are just journalism degrees. They don't know about money supply. They don't know about the types of questions you want them to ask. They're just never going to ask."
You're describing a huge emergency that we have in the business, which is, you know, we used to get around that problem by assigning people to beats so that they would educate themselves over time. And also, reporters used to have the leeway if they, were assigned to a story and they looked into something and there wasn't anything there, they didn't have to publish. And so we can't do that anymore because we have to constantly crank out so much content. We're basically, you know, reporters these days are just, they're content producing machines. That's all we do. And we're producing a consumer product, and there's a huge amount of demand for it. And as a result of that, most young reporters who come into the business nowadays don't do any reporting. They really just look for links to support what they already think. They don't have sources, they don't investigate, and they don't learn a whole lot. And this is a huge problem. They're just echoing each other. And that's how we end up having lots and lots of errors in the business.
Man, what is, to be, well, real briefly, there was a station here in Chicago that wanted to put us on, Stacks and Jacks, and the story was, I'm not liberal enough. Okay, because what I want to do on the show is have people from left and right and try and come to some kind of, I want to provide information, not affirmation, basically. And there's really no home for that. I mean, what is the difference? I mean, how do you be a quote reporter and CNBC or Fox when there's other people there that sort of act and look like reporters? I mean, they're on the same desk. They aren't reporters at all. It's a TV show, or it's a show for ratings. I mean, there seems to be a mesh going here that most people don't know the difference. They listen to somebody on Fox News, they think it's news, and yet if you're an actual reporter on Fox News, you're appalled by it. Same way on CNBC. I mean, how can you be the Walter Cronkite today? Is it even possible?
No, it's a huge problem. I just wrote a whole book about this, actually, that's coming out in October called Hate Inc. And, you know, it's about the financial pressures in the business. we're really not in the business of reporting anymore. What we're doing is we're telling people what they want to hear, because that's the easiest way to get them to come back. So the different stations identify demographics. You know, MSNBC will have its liberal demographic, and Fox, of course, has its, you know, sort of older conservative demographic that it's had since the early 90s. And they just feed their demographics what they want. And if you're a reporter in one of those organizations and you hit on something that people, that your audience doesn't like or isn't going to like, you're going to have trouble getting on the air. You know, as I'm discovering now, I work in one sort of corner of the universe, and I'm in the position of reporting something, trying to report something that they're not going to want to hear. It's very difficult, because that's not what the business is now. We're in most, all of the media landscape is basically preaching to choirs now, and that's a serious, serious problem. What you're trying to do is an anathema in the business.
As my buddy Dr. J said, Chief, people pay for affirmation, not for information.
Exactly. And that's a serious problem, because, you know, part of the business, a crucial part of the business in journalism anyway, is you have to confront your audience sometimes and tell them things they don't want to hear. You have to tell them, hey, the person you voted for may not be so clean, may not be the person that you thought, you know, he or she was. And that's a huge part of the job. If we can't do that anymore, then what are we doing? We're selling an entertainment product, and a kind of a bad one too, you know.
Well, man,
if we're going to do that, we might as well do something better.
Do you think it's just the media, or if it's some people very close to me are ardent Trump supporters, and I'm like, I think it reminds me of, I mean, I imagine, I don't know, you might have been more sophisticated than me, but everybody I knew when you were about 3 years old and your mother would say something to you, at some point you'd put your hands over your ears and say, I can't hear you, you know. And it almost seems like that's what people are, I mean, me, I never really learned anything from anybody who thought the same way I did. I mean, what's the point of that? Of having a conversation.
Right.
I mean, Maddie and I fight about baseball all the time, but I've learned more from him than I have from anybody else. I'll never tell him that. But the point is, I mean, I don't get the part that you only want to read stuff you agree with. I mean, I've had people in the last 2 years, I mean, talk to me about, I said, well, okay, tell me why you support Trump. Well, he lowered my taxes, maybe. He hates fuzzy foreigners, he hates liberals, and, I'm like, okay. I mean, that, so he hates people you hate, and he hates liberals, he hates Hillary, and he lowered your taxes. That's a reason to not listen to anybody, not even look at what they're saying, not what they're doing, not the effects of any of this stuff. Well, no. Why should I? Okay. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily the press. I think the press has a real tough job right now, because I don't know how you write anything that could possibly be against either side that the other side would actually read and learn from. I mean, where do you even put that? You probably could put it in Rolling Stone like you do, but I mean, where else would you put it?
Well, I mean, I think it's very difficult. I noticed when I first started covering, for instance, presidential campaigns in 2000, 2004, even interviewing, you know, Republicans and conservatives, people sort of dug the idea of talking to Rolling Stone, even though it was a liberal outlet. Now, you know, people basically, you know, maybe 1 out of 10 will not swear at me when I try to approach them on the campaign trail. And a lot of that has to do with people feeling betrayed by the media. They feel like the media has let them down, has lied about certain things. You know, if they don't pay attention to their concerns, and they're very, very conscious of the fact that 98% of the press, you know, comes, they're sort of upper class professional sex people who went to good schools and live in Washington, New York, and L.A. and are not in touch with their daily lives are. I mean, if you go back 40 or 50 years in the media, you know, you'd have people like, you know, Mike Royko, right? You know, or maybe 30 years, right? And, but there was always this sort of voice of, you know, the sort of working person who had a prominent space in newspapers, and that person has disappeared, in the press. They've all been replaced by people like me who went to upper class Northeast colleges for the most part. And people feel alienated, and I get that. I do. I think there are some concrete reasons why the media's been shut out.
Well, do you think there's any coming back? I mean, there's no city. There hasn't been a city desk forever. And by the way, I was a huge fan of Mike Reichel, but it was a high part of my day reading that guy. But mm-hmm. plus, he was a pretty good softball player.
Is that right? I never heard that.
Oh, no, he was a serious 16-inch softball player guy. I mean, he loved the game. But he played in a bunch of them. He was in the old newspaper league. He played forever. And he knew everybody. He probably, if he had his druthers, his second book would have been about 16-inch softball in Chicago. he knew everybody. And you do go back to those kinds of days. But I don't know, the newspapers won't. If Reichel rolled over in his grave and popped out, would he even get a job today? Who'd hire him?
No, it'd be tough now, just because the business is different than it used to be. And most, if that person would have a very difficult time getting a job in the biggest corporate media organizations like CBS, NBC, ABC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Boston Globe, LA Times. They're just not hiring that kind of person, and they're not aiming for that kind of audience. The idea now is like that person must work for the New York Post, the Fox, or the Washington Times, or we're sort of segregating people based on class ahead of time, and that writing style also that the kind of vernacular that Reichel used, which used to be pretty common in different in all the markets, that's disappeared as well. Like everybody has to write with the same voice. And it's for the same sort of upper class audience for the most part, because that's where the advertising dollars are. And I think that's a huge problem, you know? I mean, we're not connecting with a big chunk of the audience anymore.
Well, the place he used to always talk about, Billy Goats, I don't know if you remember mm-hmm. that much, but Billy Goats is still there. If you're ever in Chicago, love to take you there. But essentially...
Okay, sounds good.
But the reason why I say when the presses used to be in the basement of Tribune Tower. And right across the street, the presses for the Sun-Times were in the basement of the Sun-Times building. And then they moved them over west, and I'm going to say 30 years ago. But the idea of the Billy Goats was everybody in the Tribune, from the press guys who would put the towel down on a stool so they didn't get essentially ink from their ass on the stool, they'd be sitting there having a burger next to the VP trying to get a date with the new secretary. So you could walk in there, right. And you would get at a conversation with virtually every class of society in one room.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. and there aren't a whole lot of people who feel comfortable in those kinds of places anymore, where you never know who you're talking to, and you have to. One day you're talking to an attorney, next day you're talking to a press worker, next day you're talking to someone else. And he was comfortable doing that, and that's where he learned from people. I mean, and I don't know that a whole lot of people are necessarily comfortable. I mean, It's one thing. I love to go to different places all the time and find. But I mean, again, I'm told to be Reichel. I'm not going to be Reichel, but I can't write like that. But the point, I don't know that people open their eyes in here. That's what my biggest complaint about the Fed. My biggest complaint about the statistics coming out of. Clearly, these guys aren't looking at the society I'm looking at. I mean, the Fed never gets out of the limousine. I mean, that's why I kind of like your stuff, because you seem to have a little bit of a view, maybe more than a little, of different walks of life. I mean, I think in this economy, you almost need to have 10 people you know in all 10 of the stratuses, from 1 to 10. And you have to, like, talk to them every once in a while, see how they're doing, because it's very, very uneven. And I don't know that people that stay in one segment of society can either see the pain or the gain in the other place. I mean, you almost seem to have friends all over, up and down, or you don't know what's happening. And I get a feeling from your writing that you do, and that's why I like it.
My father was a reporter, and he, you know, I grew up watching him work. He used to have this thing he did called the phone attack when he came home from work, where he would just flip through his Rolodex and randomly call people all night, and not because he needed anything, not because he, you know, needed information for a story, but he would just sort of maintain relationships with people. And this is, you know, it's a crucial part of the job is just sort of knowing lots of people, talking to them, being able to hear what's going on in their lives, and are they mad for a reason? Are they mad for illegitimate reasons? You know, this is why I think the press was so blindsided by, for instance, the rise of Trump in 2016. They just weren't tuned into how upset voters were about stuff going into that election. and because they don't talk to those sorts of people, you know, and that's a huge failing. And I think you're right. I think there's a problem when not enough of us are just talking. You know, it doesn't even, that's not even a political point of view. It just means that you're hearing from different places in the world, and I think that's really important for a journalist.
How did a guy like Michael Moore hit it so right with that tape that he put out before the election, that the guy's lost the bass boat, he's lost the car, he's lost the wife, he's got one thing left, his vote, and he's going to do whatever he can.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a...
I think it's funny because, you know, I covered that campaign, and I was out there with the reporters. You know, I was one of the people who was in the press section, and Trump was telling everybody we were the enemy of the people, and we were pigs and all that, and most of the reporters took it very personally and got upset. But what I was hearing out there was they didn't really like Trump so much as they were just really, really mad and wanted to send a message about that. And Michael Moore hit it right on the head of the nail, because I guess he still has some, you know, hooks into that part of the world, but I think that's exactly right. If you understood what happened in 2016 as just like a pure protest vote, it made a whole lot of sense. And I think a lot of reporters didn't get it because they just don't have any connections.
What's your comment on the, if you've heard it, I'm sure you have, the Newt Gingrich assessment that the 2016 was just a follow-on of 2008, that people voted for somebody outside, only was in the Senate for a year or two, however long Obama was there. They wanted somebody relatively new from the outside because they didn't like what was going on. And when he got totally co-opted and didn't do anything anybody expected him to do, didn't rattle the cage at all. They wanted somebody even further from the outside in Trump. And the reason why and I'm not a big Newt fan, but the thing that's weird is, I don't know if you saw I always forget my history, man. I think it was one of the Sunday shows with the guy on it, not the lady. Anyway, he had three or four freshman senators, representatives from Democratic Party, and he asked this one guy, plus, get a load of this, Matt, the guy looked just like Putin, so I don't know if that's what... He could have been his son. He goes, that's easy. We did the same campaign Trump did. Washington blows. It's totally dysfunctional. It doesn't work for you. He goes, that's the campaign. It still doesn't work for you. I mean, has anything really changed? I mean, is it still the theme?
Well, I think that's a very good question. And I think it's one that not enough people in the media asked in 2016, because there was significant crossover, weirdly enough, between the Obama voter and the Trump voter. That was one of the weird sort of demographic mysteries that popped up afterwards, that a lot of people who voted for Obama also voted for Donald Trump. Now, on the surface, that doesn't make any sense, but if you look at it the way you just looked at it, it makes a lot of sense, because people in 2008, you're right, they voted for Obama mainly because they didn't want to vote for the kind of the same old, which they felt didn't work for them. So they went even further beyond the pale and voted for somebody that they thought was could not possibly be part of the political establishment and be co-opted. I don't know whether they're right about that, but that's what they did. And yeah, I think that's a very logical, I rarely agree with Newt Gingrich either, but I think that's a perceptive comment.
Well, I think that Trump has called out a lot of people that needed to be called out. I mean, I'm not a supporter, but I tell you what, it's not like he's done anything wrong. I got one final question. You know these people better than me. I don't know if it's just an older dude hoping, but I listened to the lady who won the legislative spot in Newt District, this African-American lady, and she sounded amazingly bright. I've seen some of these freshman people from both sides of the party. I'm wondering, maybe we actually have some hope. Some of these people, are they gonna be able to get there and do something, or are they gonna get co-opted? I've seen probably 10 people now. I've listened to them. It seemed very bright, educated from different areas. They're not all from, you know, the high-end spots like you mentioned. I'm wondering if maybe these freshman people don't have something going for them, and are they gonna be able to do something or no?
It's possible. I mean, I think if you talk to most people in Congress or in the Senate and you ask them what's stopping you from doing something that's meaningful, you know, for instance, the Pentagon is returning $20 or $30 billion a year, you know, or there's so much waste and inefficiency in defense spending. We could probably afford to cut that a little bit, but we can't because of the domination of the Armed Services Committee and the Appropriations Committee by military contracting funding. So, you know, what most people would say is the problem is the donors, right? Like, they just dominate the important committees. So you need new people to come in and not take that money. And, you know, I think the people that you're talking about, what's interesting about a lot of them is they're emphasizing the fact that I don't take money from X or Y place. And that's what you're going to need if you're going to need people who are going to represent people first, you know, and interest second. And you know, that's an interesting development that's going on. And we'll see if it works, but I think it's cool.
Yeah, it is. Man, it won't be so long next time. We want you back, buddy. Keep writing like this. I mean, you know, I'm all over the chart on this one, but again, reading your stuff, everything there makes perfect sense, and keep doing it because we need more guys, and we'd love to have you back. Take care of yourself. S&P futures down a quarter. We're coming back. NASDAQ futures down 175. I'm Mr. David Andelman after the break. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Mr. Matt Weber on the board. David Andelman, right with us. Manny's going to tell us all about the great seventh round pick the Bears got. I think they actually, Manny, on the third round pick, that kid dropped pretty far. He was one of the top five running backs going into the draft. They somehow got him.
Yeah, they traded up with the Patriots to go up like 12 spots, 14 yeah. spots, something like that, and they got him in the third round.
Yeah. Anyway, S&P futures, like I said, are unchanged now. NASDAQ futures down 50 cents. Dow futures down 7. So not much going on here. We have all kinds of stuff. So we got the Fed. We got Apple earnings, we got Alphabet earnings, we got Alphabet meaning Google. All that stuff's going on this week, so it should be interesting. DAX down 28.2%, FTSE up 5, call that flat. Techron down 8, call that flat. In Asia, we got the Nikkei down 48.2%, Shanghai down 24.7%, Hang Seng up to 87.9%. So, mixed bag over there, nothing definitive either direction. Oil down 19 cents, Brent down 18 cents, not much going on there. RBOB down to 207, was up to 215. So maybe gas will come back a penny or two, we'll see. Silver down 8 cents, 15 bucks, so it's still 15 or over. Gold down 4, 1284, but above 1280. So back to that, well, David will tell us what the new price is, back to 1285. Spot he wanted it to hold. Many Whittier Force, traffic, weather, sports, all kinds of sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Rainy, dark conditions throughout the Chicagoland area this morning and throughout the day, really throughout the week. And that's affecting travel time, so give yourself plenty of time if you're heading out this morning. We have extensive delays on the Edens and Kennedy, same for the Eisenhower. Traffic building on the Stevenson. Southside expressways not looking much better. Plus, looks like we have a crash with entrapment right off of the Bishop Ford on Ashland at 138th, it looks like, on the south side. We had an earlier crash on the Eisenhower. That's all clear. No issues in the suburban tollways at this hour, so that's good news. Only other issue in the area appears to be a malfunctioning traffic signal, Lake Cook Road at Schaefer Road. That's causing some confusion. But everything else looking okay out there. Just give yourself plenty of time. And wear your rain boots and bring an umbrella. Rainy today, a high of just 49. Pretty miserable weather. Right now it's rainy and 44 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today as well, and a high of 80, which happens to be where we are right now in Phoenix. So it's 80 all day, but some rain moving in later. In sports, the Cubs took 2 of 3 in Arizona after a marathon 15-inning win last night. 6-5 was the final. The game lasted 5 hours and 36 minutes, going 15 innings. Cubs are 14-12, second place in the NL Central. White Sox behind Lopez striking out 14 and the team striking out 20 Tigers. They beat Detroit 4-1, sweeping their abbreviated two-game series. Of course, Saturday's game was snowed out. White Sox are up to 11-14 on the year. And lastly, as Chief touched on, the Bears wrapped up their 2019 draft. They acquired David Montgomery out of Iowa State with their third-round pick. He's a running back. Wide receiver Riley Ridley out of Georgia with the fourth-round pick. He's the receiver. They finished with the sixth and two seventh-round picks, taking two cornerbacks and a running back to wrap up their draft. Chief.
So just have an idea. David, are you with us?
I'm here.
All right, but I don't normally do this, but I will because this week is jammed. Today's personal income, consumer spending, core inflation. Tomorrow, Chicago PMI, employment cost index, consumer confidence index, pending home sales index. Wednesday's ADP employment, market manufacturing PMI, ISM, construction printing, FOMC statement, Jerome Powell press conference, blah, blah, blah. So you can see that it's going to be quite the week.
Plus second biggest week for earnings in the S&P.
Right, and we've got the on Friday we've got all the employment numbers, and we've had 2 months in a row that have been kind of outliers one way then the other in there. So we'll see if that continues to average out or what it does. So David, it's interesting times, shall we say?
Yeah, I'd say. Plus, you know, Mnuchin going to the New York Times and saying that they're in the final laps of the trade deal.
I was reading an article on Friday that somebody says if they come up with a trade deal that they both declare a win, and after 2 or 3 days, it's considered to be kind of a milquetoast thing, and now people get down to the real numbers, it could be the, according to this guy, it could be the death knell of the market because it's been propping it up forever, and whatever happens is just not going to be much different than what was.
Well, and they're touting, I mean, all this morning, both Republicans, Democrats, and even moderates, you know, are touting a quote-unquote soft deal where, you know, the final leg of the negotiations, I mean, I think there'll be something, you know, a little bit, you know, hey, no deal that's of this magnitude has ever been concluded in, you know, 6 months or 9 months or however long they've been negotiating. So, I mean, I think there will, like you said, there will be a victory lap from both sides. That said, the sticking point now, you know, is verifiability and enforcement, and if the Chinese go back, or for that matter, if we go back, and what we say, you know, what then? More tariffs, higher tariffs, you know, does it all dissolve? Is there another negotiation? Are there more rounds of negotiation so that we make, instead of a soft deal, a verifiable and enforced deal? And I don't have the answers to that.
No, I think it's going to be, we'll sort of see. Whatever the deal is with the NAFTA, it's not NAFTA anymore because that was a bad deal. This is the new good
deal. USMCS.
The new good deal. I mean, the thing is 90 bazillion pages of everything people didn't even know they ate or drank or did anything with. The minutia in these things is
careful you don't talk about the Treasury Secretary.
Yeah, the minutia, whatever. But, I don't see how the Fed can go with these nominal numbers, David, if what we're talking about is happening. If they start busting to these 4.5% nominal rates and continue to,
For the first time, you and I have been talking about it for whatever, 3-4 years. For the first time, you're really starting to get, UFC business professors and all the talking heads on CNBC saying, hey, wait a minute. These do not accurately reflect.
Right.
The first time in the last 2 weeks that everybody's getting on and saying, hey, they're not just asset inflation, but the real shopping cart and the insurance, health insurance, health costs, educational costs or whatever that are not included, those are there.
Well, on Saturday morning, my attorney buddy has to drop. This is not a plus or a minus, but he got his tires at Costco. Well, of course, he's got a slow leak in one of them, and he's still anal enough to want his tires rotated. You know, they always tell you they're going to rotate them for you for free, and then nobody ever goes back, right?
Right.
So he shows up on a ceremony. He's there at the crack of dawn, and he's like still fifth in line to get in the tire place on Costco on Elston Avenue on a Saturday afternoon. Is just sort of like I don't know what it's like trying to get in St. Peter's on Easter or something. But he piles in. So while they're musting with his tires, we go have breakfast. We go to the Golden Nugget, which is essentially one step above the Waffle House. Guess how much an omelet is?
$12.
$14.50 with a couple.
Holy cow!
A couple of them were $16.
I mean, you and I went there a couple times. It was not $14.50.
Right. Yeah, and I'm going, wow.
I mean, it was a while back, but I want to say it was in the nines.
But this is in the hood. This is not even. This is not downtown. This is across the street. There's this place. I the sign was so old. It was when was the last time you saw an Asian food place? That now is, they're Szechuan, they're this, they're that, whatever it is. Everybody's got, with all
sushi
kinds of
house.
Sushi houses or something. Across the street, there's still an awning that says Lee's Chop Suey. I'm like, how old is that awning? Manny, when was the last time you had chop suey? Ever?
I've had it many times, but it's not as prevalent as it once was.
No, if you go to Chinatown and you see a few people sitting there, and it's chop suey, chow mein, and egg foo young, and fried rice. You know they're from the South Side. But they haven't wandered off the basic menu in 50 years. But of course, I can't even. I wouldn't even know if it was on the menu anywhere. I mean, I still like fried rice, but anyway, it's popping out all over the place, David. And I think it has to do with the taxes the city's is lifting on everybody. I mean,
no, I get it.
I heard rumors, and I won't name the place, but a large drugstore chain just left a big building near where our office is, a PTI. And since I have sources, I said, hey, what the hell? Why'd those guys leave? I said, well, not only was the rent high to start with, but they were okay with the rent, but they have a bumper. I guess you get. I never signed a big lease. My brother always has for PTI, but evidently there's a bumper for tax increases and for just general increases in janitorial staff pay, that kind of stuff. The operational bump or something they call that one, David. I don't know what that one is. Guess what? After a period of like 8 or 9 years, guess what the bump had come from taxes yearly.
I
$200,000.
Holy cow.
That's their spot of their chunk of the tax increase in a building that is massive. You could only imagine what the total tax bill has gone up for that place.
That's in the CPI shopping cart.
No, I'm sure it isn't. I mean, if you and I went to one of the, I'll use the term, one of the saloons there, the saloon restaurant, closed 2 years ago because they didn't want to pay more for lease. David, if we went in there and paid for that, paid the lease, paid for the taxes, paid for that stuff, what would we have to charge for a beer to make any money?
No, I get it.
And it has nothing to do with the cost of beer. I mean, we had this restaurant discussion at my nephew's.
And if you got the price to cover the costs, your margin probably would shrink.
Yeah, yeah. And people say, "Well, God, they're charging you $6 for a beer that at Sam's Club costs 80 cents. What the hell? Has nothing to do. They're making $5 off you. Okay, which is a lot for a beer. I get it. But the two ways of looking at costs, for you to take up a space in the place with the lease and taxes they're paying, you probably need to spend 20, no matter what you spend it on, or 25. But if you're having dinner, it might be 50. These things are being pushed up, and I think it's people sense something wrong, David, but I don't know if they're putting their finger on it. I'm not sure I am either, because I'm not privy to the entire cost list of these places, but something's weird.
And that's a problem for folks like us because we only have we can know in our mind and know in our heart, you know, what the real inflation number is, and we have known that for 3-4 years. But nevertheless, the numbers that come out that push the Fed or guide the Fed or constrain the Fed or whatever verb you want to use, those are the only numbers that we know. And you would think, as presumably experienced and hopefully adroit economists, that they would be able to look deeper into it, and if nothing else, you know, do polls and make up their own baskets, you know, for better accuracy. It doesn't happen. So the markets and the Fed and everything else are moved by the only numbers that we have.
Well, and we just had a half hour, I thought, pretty special discussion with Matt Taibbi, and it had to do with the state of essentially the reporters or news media. And I mean, I don't know, Matty, what you felt, but I felt that the conversations are coming together here, and that what is the motivation? I mean, what is the, other than, like, I guess if you're in the Journal of Political Economy or someplace, what is the motivation for the business section of the Tribune to give David or me or you or somebody a week to put together a serious article on inflation, the PCE versus the other stuff, and how we're basically being maybe I'm not without making the conclusion, are we being lied to? So if somebody to actually do the research, go to a couple of universities, interview some people, put some numbers down, take a week to do it, and come up with a 2-day article about history of the CPI, PPI, how it's changed, how they pick stuff up, what about new stuff, all the questions we answer on the show. What is the reward to the Tribune for doing that? Do you think it's anything?
No.
Matty, what do you think? I mean, Matt was just saying it's not something anybody does anymore.
No.
I think he's right.
And we wonder why we don't have, we just have, if you listen to people like me or David, we're a little more observant than most. And we're speculating. We're saying these numbers don't seem right, but I don't necessarily know the basket. What needs to be in there, David? What shouldn't be in there? Those kinds of things. But hey, one thing I want to ask you is: you look at all the different stocks. How much further can we push? Now, obviously, the movie had the world's biggest opening this weekend, right?
Right.
And you know what, Manny? I read 90% of all ticket sales were for that movie. I mean, so what? The movies that have five screens, or like four more the same movie?
Oh yeah, I mean, I just caught a glance of a, you know, ticker at the or a tape at the bottom, and it was something like, I know they did $1 billion worldwide, but domestically it was roughly, I didn't catch the exact number, 359 million, 360, whatever it was, and the next biggest one was four.
Yeah, but it was 90% of all tickets sold for that movie.
Right.
What I read, I mean, I hope that's, I mean, what I'm saying, I hope it's right, but
I think it's even more than that.
I mean, it's a, did anybody see it? Was, is it any good? Manny, do you guys know anybody?
I would never watch that.
I wouldn't need a guy. You're sounding as old as me.
I'm not into it, but it sounded like Lou is really into it and is going to watch it, so we'll have to ask his what he thought.
That doesn't surprise me. What do I talk to him? But no, in the, but it, you know, it's pretty amazing. Now, how much of that does Disney get? I mean, they're sort of part of it, but they're,
well, more than sort of part of it. I mean, they get, I'm sure they get per screening. I mean, distributors probably chop off something in the middle. But then, you know, the offshoots, I mean, Hasbro, Mattel, whatever, they're going to have, you know, more figures, more this, more that, games, whatever. I mean, it's, it will be huge. I mean, I'm not recommending Disney. I'm not, because it's had a, you know, huge jump with the upcoming streaming services and whatever. And, you know, the anticipation of this film, I mean, it's, you know, 20 billboards in Chicago, so I'm not touting Disney, especially at this price. But, no, they're going to get a ton. As well as, you know, the IMAX, you know, the AMC Entertainment, you know, any other publicly traded, you know, theater chains. I mean, they're going to all benefit.
What I'm looking, just gross look, let's put it that way, not a look at something gross look. I see these, the Matty Webbers of the world telling me how everybody is finding a way to drop back on their cable and so forth. And, of course, I believe them, and I'm listening to other people do that.
2 years of savings for me so far and counting.
Well, I've always wondered how you're actually going to get there in the end when the same people provide the same stream for everybody.
Well, when they raise the price, then we'll be even.
Right.
But they haven't yet. I'm ahead.
Right. So, okay. So what I'm trying to get to is all of a sudden the surge in Disney essentially racing up as they're going to have a streaming service. The other guy's not really going down much. They did for a little bit, but now they're right back up there. It seems like the if you took the 10 companies that are involved in providing you entertainment, they're all going to the moon. Like, there's no limit to how much they're going to suck out of you, basically. And then you have guys like Maddie, who truthfully says, I'm pretty clever. I'm paying less and less every month. Is there some sort of fork in the road where these two meet and crash, or no? I mean, can both of those be true, I guess, is the question.
Matt would have to answer that, because I don't do Netflix. I mean, here or there, I mean, we have cable service through, you know, Comcast, and here or there, you know, twice a month, you know, we'll be lazy and say, hey, instead of going out in the cold and rain and now it's snow, you know, we'll order a movie for $6 or whatever. But we're not streaming people, so I wouldn't know the answer to that.
Well, Matt, it seems like, on the one hand, the world's telling you that, you know, $200 a month is too much. I mean, which is what everybody's telling you. I mean,
yeah, that's what I told them.
Yeah. And on the other hand, you know, Disney's up a spectacular amount in their stock, and everybody else has not really gone down much, that the value of all the companies that basically suck off the $200 a month are going up while everybody's saying it's too much and trying to find a way to go down. And to me, it seems like a collision waiting to happen. Now, is it, or...
What's the collision? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, I don't know that they can make as much money as they all think they're going to make if the user...
The streaming providers?
Yeah.
The content?
Everybody. Whatever. Guys? I mean, the total.
Yeah, I guess I don't understand your question.
Well, I mean, if gas prices are going up, 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 and up, and all the gas companies are going to the moon, gasoline, at the same time everybody in the world's running out and buying an electric car, I would say one of these days those two lines have to cross and it's not going to be a good day. You know what I'm saying?
So are you talking about the cable companies?
I'm talking about in general.
Or who's going to get
hurt? The
appetite for content. And I don't. Again, I'm not a huge, you know, a huge customer for any of that stuff. Like I said, one or two movies a month, maybe. But I from what they're all telling you, and again, they have a vested interest, so of course they're going to, you know, probably embellish or accelerate, you know, what they're saying, but these folks are coming on and saying, you know, Netflix says, hey, come on in, Disney, you know, not a problem, you know, we have our people, you have yours, and we'll cross content, you know, provide, and blah, 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 and blah, blah. presumably there is an amazing appetite for content that is still growing. I'm sure that they've, you know, they're reaching saturation probably domestically, internationally. Presumably, or from what they say, they're still not only growing but just scratching the surface. So you're right, there's always something where if there are the Amazons, the Apples, the Netflix, now Disney, AT&T, you know, Time Warner, and whatever, sooner or later, there's got to be something that says something comes crashing down because people are trying to, you know, cut the size of their bundle. But I don't think we're there yet.
We're probably not there yet. I'm trying to say clumsily. I wasted all my good words on Matt. Is that the total value of that whole industry in the last 6 weeks has got to be up, what, 20% of it? Some massive number?
Probably will.
And at the same time, you're telling me everybody can't wait to cut out of it. I mean, I'm just saying that the stocks are not acting like it. How's that for the short version?
Yeah, I mean, Netflix, and you know, I'm not long one share, and I have, you know, one bearish spread on, but it just doesn't go down.
Well, same.
I mean, it doesn't matter who enters or what the bundle is, or they raise the price or whatever. Oh, geez, they're saturated domestically. Evidently, they got a growing yeah. business. You know,
well, they're all up
internationally. Contest. That just props it up.
Well, I mean, they're all
they
up.
They can sell it, you know, 80-100 times yeah. earnings, no problem, and pay $15 billion a year in content. Doesn't matter.
So, David, we have these earnings this week. Switching subjects a hair. I'm not going to say it's cause and effect, but the last quarter of last year, the thing that somewhat set it off, I'm not going to say it's causative, is a clunk earnings at Amazon when it went down like $400. Any chance of one of these guys having a real clunker this week? The Amazons, the Googles, the Apples?
You know, maybe too. Apple. I mean, it's run up, you know, big time from like $25, $30 a share, and that is, you know, I mean, their thing on, you know, China and cutting prices in China and whatever, that did put a drag on the market. I don't know about Amazon. I don't own a share nor short a share, but, you know, I think their business is really good, and I think their web services are, you know, cloud and everything is carrying them. But the one that could
provide
a damper is Apple.
Actually, Amazon's earnings were last week. It's Google and it's Apple.
Right, Google and Apple.
And Amazon was not a surprise. It stayed right there. It was up like $50 on Friday.
They've been good.
So at $50 a day for the rest of our lifetime, it goes up? Or what? There's no...
I think certainly if they get back over 2,000 towards the 52-week highs, they'll get resistance.
Well,
I think some of their big box strategy is actually going to hurt them.
If we got our buddy Hal Snyder on and he won, how's that for a Southside term? And he won a PhD thesis. I'm going to say, David, my opinion again, which is if you still had a phone machine, you could put a quarter in and get a call. Is these companies that are very, very comfortable not being, I'll say, well, with ETFs and mutual funds, they're still in the public domain, but they don't mind being very closely held. I mean, they never want to split. They never want to do anything like the Amazons
right.
and the Google. I seem to think those stocks, even Apple to a certain extent, although there's more people that own Apple, they really want a trend. I mean, they're liable to go from 2,100 to 1,600 because people are negative on it, and all of a sudden, they're liable to go from 1,600 to 2,100 without a day down either, right? You think
I think one of the reasons is I was trying to think of it. But, you know, in I don't think Amazon is not in the Dow, but nevertheless, some of these indexes are price-weighted, so they don't want to lose their influence, so they keep the stock high by not splitting.
Well, but we're seeing all these. When I say a lot of them now, I mean they're pushing 50% not publicly held,
right?
Where I mean, 40 years ago, you never wanted that. You wanted Lucent to be owned by Ma and Pa. I mean, you didn't.
Right.
And now nobody seems to care. I mean, maybe they're right. Maybe I won't use the term manipulate, but maybe. I mean, it doesn't seem like we're hurting them at all.
No.
All right. So end of the week, David. All this stuff. Up or down? We've been up for a while.
I'm going to say down 1%.
Really? So down a little bit?
Yeah.
Any chance of a move out of gold? What about oil? Oil's up here pretty high.
You know, I love everything I think natural gas is the play, whether futures or find an ETF, XLP or something like that. Had a big, big move down over the last month, and that's where the trade might really help, the trade issue with China. They'll buy more natural gas. That is the place to be.
XLP has been unusual call buying in there virtually every day for the last 2 weeks, and I think it's done nothing but go down.
So I think that's the spot.
I think these guys might just be early, whoever these guys are. It might not even be guys, David. It might be ladies. Who knows?
Anyway, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. You never know. The SP futures down 50 cents. NASDAQ futures down $2. Again, nothing but information and earnings this week. Should be fun. Be back tomorrow. Talk all about it. Stacks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.